in today's hot market, it's really rare that you're going to get a true off-market deal that doesn't have any broker connection. And the reason for that, today's market, is because it's so hot. Sellers want to get dollar for the most part, and how can you blame them? So they're going to want to take it to a broker.
If you have over $200,000 sitting stagnant in your bank, retirement account, or home equity, then you're literally losing money. On this show, you learn how to get that money working for you consistently and conservatively. Learn to grow your nest egg with your host, Sean Winslow. Let's dive in.
What's going on, everyone? I'm Sean Winslow, and this is the Multifamily Money Podcast. As always, thank you everyone for tuning in on today's Multifamily Monday show. It's a solo show, and it's with yours truly for the whole episode. We're going to get into some of the nitty-gritty, some of the kind of minutiae of how to find deals. So this episode is going to be solely on how to find deals in 2022. Because as we all know, it's a crazy market out there, very hot market, hard to find at least a good deal, right? So everyone has their own criteria of what a good deal is. Maybe it's at least a 10% cash on cash return. Maybe it's even higher. You're looking for 15% IRR. For those that aren't familiar with those terms, cash on cash return, simply what's the return based on the cash or your investment into the deal. And then IRR is the internal rate of return. And that's a simple way to put it, is essentially based on all the cash flows from your investment. So from, if it's in what we're doing, apartments, right? It's from the cash flow from rent minus expenses, gives you your cash flow plus when you go to sell, any gain you make. And then that's based on a discount rate. And usually the discount rate is usually the fair market rate, free market rate. And that gives you your internal rate of return. I say that like it's a simple term, like most people should know, which is not the case. Even people that are talk about IRR day in and day out don't necessarily understand what it truly is. And to me, it can actually be kind of a misleading number, because when we're talking about what we do, is one aspect of that. And IRR, like I mentioned, is the gain you get from selling the property. And obviously, when you're doing projections, that's a big part of the projection. A big calculation you're making, a big assumption is what you can sell it for. What's that exit cap rate? And so when people are saying, oh yeah, this is a 20% IRR, well, that's based off an assumption that they're going to be able to sell it at their predicted sales price, at their predicted cap rate. And that's a big assumption, especially in the market we're in today, where they say rates are going to rise. And this is the first time in a little while. We also got inflationary period. We got supply chain issues. Obviously, the pandemic we're still in, there's just a lot of factors in this moment. And when you're throwing around those like 20%+ IRR, that's a big part of that IRR calculation is the gain you're going to make on the sale. So to me, the IRR can kind of be overrated, but then again, everyone wants to look at it. So it's something you have to include. It's kind of one of those double-edged swords. But anyways, that's not the point of the show. The point of the show today is how to find deals in 2022 and ones that make sense for you. And like anything you do in life, anything you do in business, everything comes down to relationships. And a lot of people say it's who you know, but I think it's more of who knows you, right? Who are you top of mind of when it comes to, say, a broker has a deal? Are you top of mind for them? If not, then that's a big problem. So what I'm going to get into, this is going to be a three-part series. Part one today is focusing on your target market. And for some of you, you might already have your target market, right? It might be your backyard. You might be in a great market already to go find deals. But maybe you're in a market where it's not great. Maybe you're living in an area, maybe like an LA or New York City or San Francisco, you're trying to buy cash flowing deals. That's hard to do in those markets. Very low cap rates. Those are more of like your appreciation markets, your kind of stable markets where all things considered, it's going to be a solid investment to preserve your capital, but not necessarily to produce a healthy cash flow, especially right off the bat. So maybe you need to go to a different market to pursue that. Well, how are you going to pick this market? So today I want to go into the criteria that I look at when picking a market, and how I pick a market. And then also from the standpoint of traveling to that market, building relationships when you don't live there. Obviously, if you live in the market, you're going to be a few steps ahead of everyone else that's out of the market because you're the boots on the ground. You know that market and you're already there, right? Versus me, where I got to leave my house, drive to an airport, get on a plane, fly, get off the airplane, get my rental car, and then I'm in the market, right? But it's doable. I do it. And I do it because previously mentioned, I'm in a market like a Boston where it's not necessarily a great place to buy cash flowing apartments. You know, low cap rates makes it really tough and a lot of competition. And people are willing to pay, you know, high premium because they're buying into a market with strong fundamentals, population growth, job growth, income growth. And it's a place where people don't mind paying more because they know their capital is going to be preserved. It's solid as investment. Not that other markets aren't solid, but in the terms of the pay a premium for it's, I never like to call anything a sure thing, but a market like that, it's more of a sure thing than maybe say an Oklahoma City. But anyways, let's get into it. So what do I look for when I'm going after a market? And how many markets should you target? I think that's an important thing. Just like anything in life, there's always that shiny object syndrome. Ooh, I like Austin. Oh, I like Dallas. Oh, I like Charlotte. Oh, I like Oklahoma City. Oh, Tampa. Oh, Columbus, Ohio. You know, it goes on and on and on. And yeah, those ones I named are all great markets. But this whole thing is about building relationships. And it's hard to do that when you're spread thin. Can you do it? Of course. But if you're solely trying to build relationships, it's better to focus on 2 to 3. I say 2 is the best, but I'd say 3 is really where the most you should be focusing on. But then once you build solid relationships, of course, then you can move to others. But at first, I think you should focus on 2 to 3 markets. All right. So how are you going to pick those markets? Well, first, what I've come to realize is you want to first focus on the bigger MSA. So for instance, say you're in Georgia, but you like Augusta or you like Warner Robins, you like it's one of those secondary tertiary markets, right? Well, you would think, let's go find brokers in those markets. Well, a lot of the time, those brokers are actually going to be, even though they cover and support the Warner Robins and Augustas, they're actually going to be located in the Atlanta, the biggest MSA. That's where the bigger brokerage houses are at. So you want to focus on those first, building relationships there, then it will branch out into those secondary and tertiary markets. So first, what am I looking for? In terms of the market itself, obviously, I'm going to look at the demographic and economic trends. So what I look at for population growth, it's very important, right? You want a place that has net migration, net positive migration. More people are moving in than moving out. Very important. So what I look for is I look over the last 20 years because I want to see a trend, right? I don't, obviously, you want to see what's recently happening too, right? You don't want to just be like, oh, so it is positive over 20 years, but then you look at it and it's like, oh yeah, but over the last 3 years, it's actually been negative. So you want to look at both, but over the last 20 years, you want it to be at least population growth of 20%. So you want to see growth of 20%. So say from 2020, you want to see a 20% growth between those periods. And then I'm going to look at the last 3 years and make sure that's also positive growth. And then next, I'm going to look at medium household income. And you can get these, where I get a lot of this data is on city-data.com. And you simply just type in the city you're looking for and all this information is generally there. You might have, sometimes you have to do a little calculation to see what the percent growth is. They don't always list that. Sometimes they do. But anyways, medium household income growth is the next one. And I also look at this over the last 20 years. And I want to see at least 30% growth over the last 20 years. And again, obviously, I look at the most recent years and make sure that trend is still going up. Next, you look for the median house/condo value growth. Also look at this over the last 20 years. And that should be at least 40% growth over the last 20 years. Next, I'm going to look at the crime index. And I just want to say, I'll do this for each area I'm looking to invest. So the Warner Robins, the Augusta, the Macon's, you know, when I'm looking in Georgia, those areas. And so crime index, which is also going to be on city-data.com, you want to look for a crime score of at least 500 or less. And you want to see it trending down over the preceding years. You don't want to see, yeah, it's less than 500, but it's been ticking up. You don't want to see that because, okay, it's at 500 now, but next year, what's it going to be at 550, 600? So you want to see 500 or less, and you want to see it trending downwards. And now you want to look at job growth over the last 12 months, and you want to see at least a 2% growth. It might be a little skewed now because things we've had with the pandemic, right? Lost a lot of jobs, and now jobs are coming back. So you do want to do a little digging and see what it was kind of preceding the whole pandemic leading up to it, and then what happened during what's happening now. So you want to dig a little deeper in that. And then lastly, I like to see, is it a landlord-friendly state? Slash city, or is it more of a tenant friendly? Obviously, you want it to lean a little bit more towards being landlord friendly. Also, another reason why I don't necessarily like Boston from an apartment standpoint, because it's very tenant friendly. And people are what I call a professional tenants. They know how to play the game and stay in a unit without paying for months. It can even get up to 18 months before you can get someone out. So that's another thing you want to look for, is it's more even to a little bit more landlord friendly. Now, if you are going somewhere out of your backyard, somewhere it's going to need travel to get there, what I say is, if you're driving, it's best to have it be 2 hours or less. It just makes sense, because if you need to get somewhere, you don't want it to be more than 2 hours. And flying, I would say 3 to 4 hours and no more than that. It takes 3 to 4 hours, but how long does it take you to get to the airport, sit there, check in, board, fly, and then obviously get off and get on your way. Now, what can change this is if you have boots on the ground in the market, then it can be a little longer of a flight, right? And boots on the ground can be anyone. It can be maybe someone you're partnering with. Obviously, that's probably the best, right? Because they also are in it, in the game with you and have the same goal. But it also can be, you know, a friend, a family member, maybe a previous coworker, someone that you have a good relationship connection with that you can leverage when you need to get to know that market and become familiar with it. Someone you can bounce questions off of. In that case, when you have boots on the ground, then it can, travel time can extend a little. All right. Now, once you've established your markets, now is when you want to build your list of brokers to reach out to. So this is really broker centric, this whole thing I'm going to get into now. And that's how I do it. That's how I recommend doing it. Obviously, there's ways to get stuff off market, go directly to seller. That's not what this is about. Primarily because in today's hot market, it's really, really, really rare that you're going to get a true off-market deal that doesn't have any broker connection. And the reason for that, today's market, is because it's so hot. Sellers want to get dollar for the most part. And how can you blame them? So they're going to want to take it to a broker. Now, whether that just goes to their shortlist or goes directly to the open market, that's a different story. But probably 90%+ of the time, if not even more in today's market, it's going to go to a broker in one fashion or another. So this is all about building deep, strong relationships with brokers so that you are top of mind when they get a deal and that they're going to want to pick you when you have a competitive offer. So first thing is building your list of brokers. Kind of the easy way to do it, this is what a lot of people would tell you, is go to the Crexies and the LoopNets and even CoStars, Reonomies. And that's the type of search you're doing to find the brokers that are listing properties and get on their list. So for instance, if you're going on a Crexie.com, type in your market area. So say it's Atlanta, and then say you're looking for multifamily, do the search and you can see how the properties are listed, see who it's listed, what broker it's listed with. And you can simply compile that data and then you can reach out to them and get on their lists. Or you can do a Google search of the major brokerage firms in each of your markets and go that way and get on the list that way. Those are all great ways to do it. And then once you start seeing deal flow, you can start reaching out to them. We'll get into that in part two of, once you're reaching out to them, what does that look like? How should you can talk with them? How should you start building a relationship with them? That's all for part two next week. But best way, what I call a ninja strategy for building a list of brokers, and that is once you've developed your team, and for me, this integral part of my team was my lender. And my lender, he works for a national firm, and they also have a brokerage arm. So he's able to leverage that and access a lot of data. So what I did is, once I developed a relationship with my lender, now I was here to play the game, buy properties, we established some rapport. I asked him if he could run me a list of all the brokers in my said target markets that are actually transacting and selling properties over the last 12 months. And he was happy to do it. So I had a list of 3 target markets that over the last 12 months, what brokers were doing sales. And I listed it out. And it would list this firm, this many units they sold for this dollar amount. And what was really cool about that is you could kind of calculate what the, you could obviously calculate what the average dollar per unit was, right? So what were they selling? You could kind of get a feel of the type of properties they were selling, right? So if in a market, say it was 80 to 100K a door, and you knew that meant that that was probably your B-class property versus might have been like 250K a door. Well, you know, that broker's probably doing B+, A- type of properties. And that's obviously this relative per market. So don't think that that dollar per door is going to equate to the class that I just said in every market. That's not what it is. That stuff in Boston that's trading for $500K a door, that would be probably considered B class. So, and then you got new stuff that's well over 600. So it all depends on your market, right? But if you know your market, which you should at that point, type of deals that broker team is selling. And so based on your criteria, you know which ones to reach out to. And what's really good about this list, actually know what brokers, what brokerage firms are actually doing business. Because you don't want to waste your time by reaching out to brokers that aren't really doing business. And I'm not saying don't do that, because that is also a great way, especially if it's a younger one, maybe it's a new broker in the game, build a relationship with him, but just know that's the long game with that individual. And then you can grow your careers together. But in terms of finding deals to close on this year, you definitely want to go after the ones that have been transacting in the last 12 months. Because that means people are going to them because they sellers trust them. They know they're good at what they do. So they're going to continue to do that. So they're continue to have deal flow. So you want to be reaching out to the brokers that are actually transacting. So that's what I did. I got a list from my lender that had all the brokers doing transactions in the last 12 months. And then I compiled that list. And then based off kind of what I felt the dollar per door that these guys and gals were doing, the ones I wanted to reach out to based on my criteria of B-class property, C-plus to B-class property. And then from that list, I had a solid group of brokers that I knew were doing business, knew were transacting, that I could reach out to start to develop a relationship with and then get deal flow sent my way, especially the cream of the crop deal flow, not just the stuff that the okay stuff that hits the whole entire market, right? Because that's the point of this game. The point is to develop a relationship with these brokers so that when they first get a deal sent to them, they send it to their short list first. You want to be on that short list. So you see the best stuff first. Then you can put offer together and hopefully lock it up before it gets sent to the whole market. So that's what this episode, part one of finding deals in 2022 is about. Obviously, one, finding the market you want to invest in. Maybe you already know that. And then two, how to build the list of brokers you should be reaching out to and developing a relationship with. All right, everyone. I hope this episode brought a lot of value. I know once I figured out that ninja strategy of getting a list of brokers that are actually doing business over the last 12 months, that's when everything changed for me. That's when, one, my deal flow just exploded in my inbox. And then two, that's when everything changed from the perspective of actually developing relationships with guys and gals that are doing business. And I saw better deals, more deals. And that's how I landed my first deal, was through that list. So on part two, we're going to talk about, all right, you have this list. How should you go about reaching out to these brokers? What does that look like? How you should play the game and how you should kind of tips and tricks of building a solid relationship with these brokers. And then we're going to have part three. And at part three, I'm actually going to give you a way to download. I put together this PDF of everything I'm talking about right now. And it goes into more detail than I'm going to be explaining here. And it also has a cool email template too of how to reach out to brokers. But I'll give you that information on how to get it on part three. All right, everyone. Thank you for tuning in. I really hope, like I said, this brought you value. And if it did, please, please share it with someone who you think could also get value from it. All right, as always, keep at it. I hope you're still going strong at those 2022 goals. And just know you got to put the work in today so that you can live the life you want in the future. Be able to do what you want with whoever you want when you want. And at the end of the day, you can make your life what you want it to be. You can obtain financial freedom, whatever that means to you. You just got to put the work in now and you'll reap the rewards in the future. So as always, thank you for tuning in. And I look forward to catching you on the next one.
Hey, this is Sean Winslow. After being in the financial service industry for years and having candid conversations with good people just like you, I realized that so many of us are wanting an investment strategy that provides solid returns and consistent income without the bumps in the road. There's little known secret that your financial advisor doesn't want you to know. There is an investment out there that is less volatile and the returns are stronger. Get more details by going to greenbriercg.com and clicking on the free e-report. And by the way, if this show has provided you any value, then feel free to leave an honest written review and, of course, share it with a friend who needs it. See you next week for another great show.